everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's January 2021. Happy New Year. And you're listening to episode 217, which is a conversation about the Disney Plus Star Wars television series, The Mandalorian. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Philip Tallon, who is the author of The Poetics of Evil and the author of The Absolute Basics of the Christian Faith. Phil is currently the interim dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University. Phil has written an online exclusive television series review for the Christian Research Journal, and it's called This is the Way, or Is It? Thinking About Religion in the Mandalorian. You can read it for free online at our website, equip.org. Phil, it's good to have you on.
Oh, pleasure to be back again.
Well, as I mentioned, we are going to be talking about The Mandalorian, which just finished its second season on Disney Plus. And also, I wanted to tell our listeners that if you are somebody that doesn't like to have any spoilers of any kind and you're still trying to catch up with finishing the season, or maybe you haven't watched it yet, then just warning, this is going to be a spoiler-filled discussion. So we're going to be talking about The Mandalorian and Star Wars. And so if you haven't caught up on the seasons, then you might want to turn this off and come back to it later. But for those who have and are wanting to kind of dig into some of the themes and some of the things that have been happening, just not just the action shots, but what the storytelling, what's happening, you know, we will be discussing that right now. So for some of those listeners who haven't watched the show and maybe they're going to listen to this and be motivated to watch it, what is The Mandalorian about?
Well, the show is recently launched show on the platform Disney Plus, and it was a key selling point for people signing up for Disney Plus. They're going to have these weekly installments of Mandalorian Season 1. And the show follows a sort of nameless Mandalorian, at least nameless at the beginning, who are reminiscent of old Western heroes like Clint Eastwood's Man with No Name. Here we have the man with no name and no face, at least at first, as he wanders throughout the galaxy getting into adventures. And Mando, as he's often called, his name is eventually revealed to be Din. He is a bounty hunter, much like Boba Fett, the other famous Mandalorian armor-wearing character from the original trilogy. And he takes various jobs, finding people and bringing them back. His first job goes successfully. His second job, though, has a twist because the bounty that he sent for to bring back dead or alive is the incredibly charming, meme-inducing Baby Yoda, as he was called by the internet. On the show, he's called The Child, and his name is later revealed to be Grogu. And so the story very much becomes a tough guy with a heart of gold who becomes softened through, you know, finding someone that's dependent on him and is vulnerable. And so it's a bit of a redemption story for the Mandalorian as he decides to rescue the child after he's delivered his bounty, which then makes him a hunted man. Now he's going to be hunted by all the other bounty hunters in his guild as they have to escape from various difficulties in order to bring the child back to his people. And one of the things that's revealed in the show is that the child is a force user. Like Yoda, he has incredible force powers, though they're undeveloped because he's so young. And so the Mando, his goal in the show is to escape from trouble. Ship's always, you know, breaking down, or he's kind of wandering into some place or other. So there's a little bit of a challenge of the week TV Western structure to it in his quest to bring Grogu to some Jedi for training. And season two concludes with, you know, that mission coming to fruition.
So, you know, of course, as I just mentioned, that season two has just wrapped up for The Mandalorian. And so, of course, with anything Star Wars or Marvel or any of those kind of nerd culture series, there's always a big fan reaction. So what's been the fan reaction this time to the end of this season?
Well, as far as I can tell, it's been very positive, especially given how negative fan culture has become, how divided it's become, and over the over recent years with the sequel trilogy, where it almost seemed like the way people show their love of Star Wars is by hating Star Wars, you know, and hating the new installments that come out. and for various reasons. And whereas The Mandalorian, you know, especially as the second season wrapped up, you know, was Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, the creators and showrunners have just been hailed as saviors of the Star Wars universe. And I think that in terms of critical consensus and fan consensus, this is, you know, the most successful installments in Star Wars in a long time, and possibly since the original trilogy, at least in terms of kind of widespread impact. And a lot of the, of course, a lot of the books and the Clone Wars and Rebels TV shows have actually been, you know, really embraced by fans and well liked. But I don't think they've had quite the massive pop culture impact that The Mandalorian has had. And so I think, you know, this is without a doubt the most consistently successful new Star Wars product to come out since Return of the Jedi.
So why do you just mention that it was, you know, one of the most successful Star Wars products to come out since the Return of the Jedi? And why do you think that this is? There have been a lot, like, so between the movies, in case people aren't, you know, that familiar with Star Wars, and I still come across people, even young people today, who've never even seen Star Wars. But why is it that this has fared so well? There have, of course, been animated series like the Clone Wars about Star Wars, and some that are actually been Rebels on Disney's platform. But why has this particular one found such a resonance? I mean, especially you mentioned Baby Yoda. That's become just kind of like almost iconic. It was just everywhere. There were so many memes of Baby Yoda on social media, and, you know, I'm assuming products are coming and so forth that, you know, people can have, like, figurines and all of this. So why did people kind of resonate with this more than maybe some of the other, you know, not the movies series that have been created about the Star Wars universe?
Well, I think a bit like Rogue One, which I would regard as the other, you know, completely successful installment in the series, the creators shift a little bit off the typical epic mythology Star Wars axis. And that's a really hard genre to consistently play in, is to play on the scope of, you know, vast, epic, generational, you know, mythology, right? And, you know, it's just so big. Everything is so big that, you know, if anything is off, then it really, really doesn't work. So this is a smaller genre piece moving into the genre of the Western, and not just the Western, but like almost like the old TV Western, where, you know, there's a, you know, very specific challenge that the hero has each week to overcome, new bad guys to encounter, and a chance to show off, you know, his gunslinging skills. So you think about a recent show like Justified or something, where it's every week that, you know, Raylan's going to get into a, you know, gunfight with somebody and he's going to come out on top. The Mandalorian is like that, and it's gone to this Western mode. I think they also wisely slowed the show down a little bit more, which takes us back into the much more the rhythms of the first installment, A New Hope, which, you know, is a more leisurely kind of atmospheric film, despite still being part of hyper accelerated, you know, Hollywood film style. It was, you know, if you compare A New Hope to more recent installments, there's a little bit more kind of breathing room, a little more atmosphere, a little more space, and Mandalorian has that. And it's just the two central characters are so captivating. There's almost no dialogue between them. You have a very taciturn main character in The Mandalorian, Din, who's got this awesome armor. He has a lot of the same features that make Boba Fett so cool. You know, he's this sort of tough, taciturn, Western-style hero, right, that we love. And he's juxtaposed with this very small, adorable species we've only seen a few times in the Star Wars universe. We don't even know the name of it. Hence Baby Yoda, that we call it by the most identifiable character, who is one of these species. And the doll that they made for Grogu, Baby Yoda, is adorable. It's expressive. It's the tiny little thing the Mandalorian has to carry around. He's got these force powers. He's always sort of causing little bits of trouble, especially around eating and so forth. And so they're two really charming, almost universally identifiable characters that yet, you know, feel fresh in a certain way. and they're, and so, you know, I think they just connect, you know, really widely. My, you know, children have been watching this with me, and the, you know, the story has a kind of an authorial unity as well. The creators, Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau, have, you know, really been invested. They're Star Wars fans. There's all sorts of connections to the expanded universe and Clone Wars TV, you know, series and all sorts of things, that if you pick up on these things, you can enjoy them. They make sense even if you don't. And so they're kind of connecting and unifying a lot of the Star Wars products that are out there, and just, you know, bringing a kind of a coherent story arc throughout that I think we've been missing. You know, the last trilogy, the sequel trilogy, felt really uneven. It felt like there was this game of tug of war going on between J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson for this, like, meaning of the series, with, you know, they're kind of contradicting each other almost. Where here we have a, you know, a whole satisfying story. Now, some people I think have said that the show is a little bit dull at times. Not everybody has adored it and loved it. I, you know, certainly in the middle of season one, you know, found myself, and okay, well, I'm a little less excited to watch the new Mandalorian than I would otherwise be. But now, especially having gone through the whole series, I've very much enjoyed going back and rewatching and seeing the intentionality that's all the things that are embedded throughout the series. There is a holistic quality to the series that's very satisfying.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast. From the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal, today's guest is Dr. Philip Tallon. He has written an online exclusive television series review for the Christian Research Journal. It's called This Is the Way, or Is It? Thinking About Religion in the Mandalorian. You can read it for free online at our website, equip.org. Now, you'll want to listen to this break for sure for this episode, because I have some big news for you. We are giving added benefits to our Christian Research Journal subscribers, and those readers will be the first to access exclusive online content articles that are related to these podcasts. So if you would like to be able to be some of the first people to read these articles on our website, they will be available only to Christian Research Journal subscribers, and you can subscribe at our website, equip.org, for $33.50. So you're going to get the print issue, which is quarterly, and those articles don't make it up onto our website for some time. So they're quite exclusive. And then you'll also get the online content that matches these particular podcasts that you're hearing these interviews. Now, this Mandalorian review is going to be the last one that we have up there for just everyone to see immediately. And also, just please go to our website, equip.org, because, you know, the Christian Research Journal has been around for more than 40 years, and we have thousands of articles on there completely free to you. If you'd like to see the new content, please do subscribe. Another way you can help us out, continue this podcast, is to go and give us a tip. If $33.50 is not in your budget, you can do that by going to equip.org, going to magazine, dropping down to the menu, Postmodern Realities. Any of the landing pages has a link where you can go and give us a tip, any amount, maybe something small, $3, $5, $10. But we'd really like you to consider a subscription to the Christian Research Journal to get all of this online exclusive content that goes with some of these very fascinating and thoughtful and provocative podcasts that we have with our guests. So thank you for all the ways that you partner with us. And of course, we want you to tell other people about this podcast so they can discover it. Best way to do that, tell a friend. We welcome any review that you'd like to give us, a starred or written review, particularly at Apple Podcasts. But again, thank you for being a partner with us and for supporting our content.
We were just specifically talking about The Mandalorian and why it's, you know, been received better by fans probably than other more recent films in the theater. And you know, that goes all the way back to, like, fans latching on to even Star Wars as a universe, which it was like this space opera and it was adventure. And so it's had this really big, significant place in American pop culture since, you know, the first movie, A New Hope, was released in 1977. Now, there's been a lot written about the plots and the characters and their origin stories, you know, by fans. You can get into the minutiae. I have some friends that are fans. In fact, they know so much about Star Wars. If I ask them a question, I don't get a short answer. I probably get like a dissertation length text about all the different roots and back to the comics. And so there's some people that are very heavily invested in this universe, but there's not been a lot of discussion or evaluation of some of the themes that are in the film. And I do want to point out to our listeners that we have covered Star Wars and some of its themes. And so you can read for free online at our website, equip.org, our main article that talks about some of the larger themes called May the Force Be With You, Evaluating the Star Wars Worldview. And that's available at our website. And then we have reviews of some of the more recent films. But I just wanted to have Phil kind of just unpack for us why he thinks that there hasn't been a lot of discussion of the films in the broader pop culture.
I think that part of the reason why we haven't talked about the ideas behind Star Wars is because they're not very prominent in a way, as opposed to other, there are other filmmakers who are just more philosophical and really want you to kind of think about ideas, right? So we've talked about Christopher Nolan and his work, and Nolan's all about a big idea at the center of the film that he's going to incept in your brain and get you to think and talk about and mull over, where Lucas's ideas and intellectual preoccupations are more subtle, and in many ways they're actually masked by what you might say is complementary or even contradictory aspects of his filmmaking. And so in the article I talk about how Lucas is very much a product of his generation, right? So he's a boomer. He basically is coming of age during the Vietnam War. You know, it's one of his first movies, American Graffiti. You know, the characters go off and one of them dies in Vietnam. Vietnam is very much on his mind. Whereas the films that he's making, you know, feel very classic. You know, they're in the style of these swashbuckling serials and science fiction movies of old, and you know, World War II dogfighting movies are the style that he's using. Meanwhile, he's got some anti-institutional tendencies. Lucas is a kind of a maverick filmmaker. He's never really worked within the Hollywood studio system. Star Wars is the closest he gets, but even there, he's got kind of a weird deal. So he's basically operating outside of system, engineering a lot of things on his own. So he's roguish in that way. And a lot of his movies have sort of deep down the kind of very modern mid-20th century struggles of forming your identity against who your parents are, which is a very modern way to be in the world, as opposed to, you know, conforming to the expectations of your parents. You know, having generational conflict is central throughout. And then there's also a kind of a religious openness that the movie sort of takes us through. So characters, you know, often are discovering the ways of the Force and have to kind of learn to acclimate, to convert almost to this new religion. And that maybe fits a little bit with the 60s era interest in new forms of religion and spirituality. Francis Ford Coppola famously encouraged Lucas to try and found a religion based on the Force, which Lucas wisely didn't, but his ideas have caught on enough that, you know, people sometimes identify religiously as Jedi. I know that there's famously some, you know, big census they did in the UK where a non-trivial number of people said that their religion was Jedi, right? There's something they like about the religious ideas there. It's a very sort of generic spirituality, kind of a pantheistic spirituality that that perhaps people can get behind, though I suppose they're maybe not down with the Jedi refusal to have romantic attachments or to, you know, basically they seem to say almost take vows of poverty and that kind of thing. Maybe people aren't into that. They just like this idea of stretch out with your feelings and, you know, embrace the Force. But almost all of these things that, you know, in the movie take a backseat to the action, right? You know, the dash of characters across the galaxy, escaping from trouble, facing off in laser sword battles. And the movie is so traditionally a Hollywood blockbuster that I think we rarely wrestle with the ways that Star Wars is, you know, representing kind of modern sensibilities in a lot of ways, you know, trying to working through very much kind of boomer love generation concerns, but in this, you know, just traditional film style and using kind of epic narrative storytelling. And so it's almost like, and I found this difficult for the piece, is to continually focus on the ideas, because you do just want to kind of slide off. And even thinking about season two, I mean, questions are, oh man, you know, what's going to happen with Boba Fett, right? Boba Fett's back, you know, what's he going to do? And what's going to happen with Grogu's training? And you just, it's so easy to get caught up in the narrative excitement that the philosophy fades away.
So I mentioned that the title of your article is called This is the Way, or Is It? Thinking About Religion in the Mandalorian. And you did mention the Force, and that's back when it started. I think people weren't sure, well, what is the Force? And is it good? Is it bad? You know, kind of like that Eastern sensibility of being partially both things. Mm-hmm. And we find out in this season, actually, that the Mandalorian, he has in the past, because he has interaction with people in his particular religious group, he is following a specific Mandalorian religion that he kind of references to by the famous saying from the series, which is, this is the way. Mm. So that's kind of just made, you know, jokes about, or even, you know, in texting with people, you can just say, this is the way, and they immediately know you're talking about the Mandalorian, and that comes up. So he's very, you know, really committed to that, to the Mandalorian way. And in this season, he meets up with some other people who are from his planet of Mandalore. And I don't recall the exact details, but I'm not sure that he was Mandalorian. He was raised by the Mandalorians. Mm-hmm. So he has, because of his parents gave them, or he was found after his parents were trying to save him when their planet was dying or something like that. Please, Star Wars, you know, aficionados, don't get me on these details. I'm a big fan, but I don't think I get into the minutia. So he meets these two Mandalorian women who are warriors also. They're fighters. They're like army kind of people in the army. And finds out from them, they kind of mock him, like, oh, you belong to that? Like, there's this, almost like they were a cult. You know, that group, that's not what we believe anymore. And it kind of really, I would say, catches him off guard, and he's just kind of surprised by that. So I just want you to unpack a little bit for us what your title is about. So as you think about religion in the Mandalorian and in the greater Star Wars universe, and you said, you know, he wasn't trying to have George Lucas, when he created this, some huge religious theme per se in it. It was just kind of naturally that he's thinking, oh, you know, maybe he was into some of those kind of, you know, Eastern, dabbling in Eastern religion in the 70s. So he just threw it in there. But how does the religion of the Mandalorian in particular differ from the Force and what we think of, you know, may the Force be with you kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Mandalorians are, all of them are, it's a warrior culture. So you need to think about Spartan culture in ancient Greece, you know, which on which that Mandalorian helmet is based, right? It's got the, you know, full helmet with little eye slits, and it's got the long nose piece coming down. They are a planet of warriors and fighters, you know, for whom their armor is incredibly important in their way of being in the world. And as revealed, Mando, Din, the main character, we see him throughout basically the whole first season refuse to take off his helmet for anything. Nobody ever sees his face. They ask him, but he says, this is the way. You know, they don't see his face. This is what he understands the Mandalorian religion to command him to do. His armor is his faith. And he's part of a group of other people who are likewise always helmeted and so forth. And because most of us are not experts in Star Wars, you know, don't know Boba Fett's underwear size and that kind of thing, you know, I think the viewer isn't, you know, it goes along with Din thinking, yes, this is how Mandalorians are. And then the second season, we meet Bo-Katan, the sort of one-time ruler of Mandalore, who's kind of deposed, trying to come get back and retake Mandalore. She's takes off her helmet. He says, oh, you're not Mandalorian. And they indicate, oh, you're one of the children of the Watch. And that's an extremist religious group that you're a part of. And the Mandalorian says, you know, there is no other way. Like, this is the way. The way that he follows, of always keeping his helmet on. So you have this kind of, this sort of inter-religious argument that, you know, people sometimes have, you know, right? The early church had this, you know, which is, how do we have to followed, you know, Jewish dietary, you know, restrictions or not, or circumcised or not, or you have this today, you know, people, you know, argue about, you know, which tenets of the Christian faith are adaptable, which aren't, you know, can you ordain women in ministry? Can you not? These sorts of issues come up. And so they're kind of having this interreligious argument, right? And what we see is that Din, after this meeting, he goes to a planet to get some information because he's on a quest to recapture the child who's been taken from him. He needs to get information. He has to scan his face in order to pull the information out. So he takes off his helmet, like out of necessity. Like, I have to do this. And you see him do this one time in the first season when you think he's going to die. He takes off his helmet. And this really surprises the guy who's with him. But then he puts the helmet back on, you know, kind of goes on out. And so we see, okay, well, maybe, you know, Din is softening a little bit. You know, maybe he's questioning some of his religious commitments. Maybe not. Maybe this is just a matter of necessity. But in the final episode, nearly the last scene, this is a big spoiler, so really stop listening if you don't want the last episode spoiled. Luke Skywalker returns because he has gotten the beacon that was sent out to the Jedi. And he saves all of our heroes by slashing through some dark troopers. And then he goes and he's going to take Grogu back to wherever he's his base is to train him in the ways of the Jedi. And we see Grogu up and he's kind of touching the Mandalorian's helmet. And so he takes off his helmet. The first time ever Grogu sees the Mandalorian's face. And they have this kind of face-to-face encounter. And Grogu touches his face. And then we see him leave his helmet off as the child is taken away. And, you know, I think it's a powerful moment. You know, it's a moment that we're supposed to, you know, see as a kind of that there's character growth on Mando's part, that he now has this person in his life who's kind of cares more about than anything. And then maybe he's moved a little bit further away from his religious training centering around his armor growing up. Maybe he's okay, there's something more important there. And I think that that's a symbolic representation of something that a lot of people go through in one way or another, which is that, you know, we have convictions of various sort, philosophical, political, religious, that, you know, through our kind of relationships and entanglements are questioned or challenged. And so while being a very, I think, kind of traditional, almost old fashioned show, this is one of the things that, you know, where the Mandalorian is touching on a contemporary theme. Now, I don't know if the creators have something in mind here, if Mando is supposed to represent a kind of a fundamentalist who then is, you know, becoming sort of more mainstream, or if this is just or where their sympathies really lie, because the characters that he meets who, you know, sort of challenge him in his way are not, they're not exactly paragons. You know, I don't think we're supposed to see them as being a really kind of having all the wisdom, but the show is certainly wrestling with kind of, to what degree do we balance out our religious convictions with our personal entanglements?
And it's kind of interesting that this is the first time that he's been, I think there was, you know, confronted that, oh, not everyone holds to the way. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe different than Luke even believing, is there a force, you know, when he was being trained by Yoda. Is there any ways in which the Force and the Mandalorian way connect, or are they just like introducing a completely different religious system? Or are they trying to say, hey, in the Star Wars universe, you only thought it was the Force, but it's really pluralistic. There's all kinds of religion in Star Wars.
So Mandalorians don't seem to be particularly Force sensitive. Mandalorians are our first real encounter with people who have these, like, a different religious code. Most of our interest in Star Wars and religion thus far is centered around the Jedi way, the Jedi religion, which has certain tenets, right? There are just these kind of principles that Jedi live by and practices. There's a sort of diffuse theology, right? There's a light side of the Force and a dark side of the Force. And then there's a moral axis you can move along, you know, so you can, yeah, it's pretty clear, right? I mean, you can be on the light side, you can be on the dark side, different powers seem to go with those. As the movies have continued, we've seen is that, you know, that they want to complexify things a bit. So, oh, you know, well, some of the Jedi teachings are not as necessary or as wise as we might, you know, as we might have thought. Perhaps they're questionable. Maybe some of those codes and practices are up for grabs. And the last movie, actually the eighth installment, the Rian Johnson's installment, really wanted to, you know, us to think about these things. And maybe the most prominent example of a theme, a kind of philosophical or religious theme in the Star Wars movies, which is the Force is for everyone, right? The kind of all kinds of people all over the place have access to the Force, and the Jedi have no monopoly on it. Luke, at one point in this disillusionment, almost seems to think that it's, you know, the Jedi should die because they, you know, they don't really truly have access to the best way to use the Force. And so, you know, we have the books that all the Jedi kind of sacred texts that at one point, you know, Luke is about to destroy, and then Yoda shows up and actually destroys the tree in which they're held. Luke thinks they're gone, but we see that Rey has in fact stolen the books and has taken them with her. And so perhaps the Jedi way will live on in certain ways. So there's a kind of a way that Star Wars is playing with and trying to kind of nuance the practice of the Force, the nature of the Force, and the, you know, problematize the Jedi religion, that again are sort of echo the Mandalorian's own quest. Maybe things aren't as simple as we once thought.
So are there any other themes in The Mandalorian that particularly stand out to you?
You know, the show is very much centered in the kind of the world of the West. I mean, you have lone heroes, you know, sort of struggling to make their way. It's continually Din is encountering other, you know, other really resolute heroes who are kind of operating with their own code, and he has to kind of work with them and sort of win them over to his side. So very much in the world of kind of the Western or the samurai film, we have these wandering Ronin, you know, who just, they have some principle they operate by, and they're good with the sword or they're good with a gun. And so you have this real focus on kind of a, you know, principle and what it takes to fight for that. There is also that theme of found family. So throughout in the second series, we meet Boba Fett. Boba Fett returns. And Boba Fett, like Mando, has been sort of adopted into the Mandalorian way. His father, Jango Fett, who we saw in the prequel trilogy, had kind of been approved by the Mandalorians. He'd gotten this Mandalorian armor, and they recognized him as one who was perhaps worthy of it, and then he got it from his father. And so most of the Mandalorians that we meet throughout the series are actually not really originally from Mandalore. They're from kind of somewhere else, but they've adopted this way of being. And the Mandalorians that we do meet, Bo-Katan and her kind of her crew, you know, aren't even necessarily the protagonists. There's a focus on adoption, right, that runs through the series. Grogu is kind of adopted as Din's child. Din had been adopted into that world. And so much of Star Wars is about family, family legacies, wrestling with who your parents are, right? Often for ill in the original movies. But in these ones, it's, you know, it's really a very positive portrayal of the family. Kind of family is created through connection. We also see people who kind of are cynical at the beginning of the series and then who become believers again. So Din goes on this journey where he's at first, you know, just very kind of focused only on himself. There's another character, Mayfield, who had once been an Imperial trooper and then is now in jail, and he's sort of toward, by the end of the series, seems like he actually got principle again. He's ready to be a freedom fighter. He's kind of back on the side of the Republic. He believes in something again. And so that kind of return of faith or growing a heart, you see that throughout the series, fighting for something that's bigger than you.
Well, I did want to tell our listeners, because I missed it until I started reading articles on the internet about it, is that just like the Marvel Universe films, please stay through the very long credits to the end, because more things are revealed if you're watching The Mandalorian this end of the season. Well, finally, I want to ask Phil some fun rapid-fire questions that I will call our Winter and New Year's edition. So, it's just been New Year's. Do you usually watch the ball drop?
Oh, no. We set our clocks forward about 3 hours and then celebrate a kind of fake midnight, some mid-Atlantic midnight at about 9 p.m. and then go to bed because we get up pretty early in our house and there's just by the time midnight rolls around, we're rarely having fun.
Do you typically make any New Year's resolutions? And if you do, what are they?
Oh, well, I've developed some New Year's intentions recently. You know, so normally I'll try and use it as a moment to kind of collect myself. Oh, what do I do? You know, typically it involves just sort of setting out some more ambitious form of study. But I try not to give myself too many vows that I might break. And so, because I think that's typically not the best way to go. So I'll undoubtedly, form some intentions to, sort of do a bit more kind of serious, devotional time or add a new element in there or, eat a bit healthier.
Now, I know you are in Texas, so there's not like big, huge snowstorms that are, piling up the snow at your house. But when it does get cooler in the winter months at your house, are there gas logs or real logs burning in the fireplace?
No, we don't have a fireplace here, though we have been putting on the Disney Plus Arendelle-themed fireplace on our television since they've added that feature. And we'll sometimes add a fake Netflix fire just to make things feel a bit festive. But other than having a fire out in our fire pit, it would be very unwise for us to burn anything indoors.
Wow, that's really interesting, because when I lived in California, we definitely had a fireplace and even a chimney. So that's kind of interesting. Well, thanks, Phil, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Oh, very glad. Thank you for having me back.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Dr. Philip Tallon of Houston Baptist University, who has written an online exclusive television series review for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called "This Is the Way or Is It? Thinking About Religion in the Mandalorian." You can read it for free online at our website, equip.org. And again, to continue reading these exclusive online articles, please subscribe to the Christian Research Journal at our website, equip.org, because these articles are going to be exclusively now for our subscribers and our readers. So thank you. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.